This is a CNA podcast.
Hello, I'm Lin Su Ling, and you're listening to Heart of the Matter, where we take a deep dive each week into one of the biggest news stories. In what will go down as one for the history books, Singapore has rolled out not one but four budgets. Deputy Prime Minister Heng Swee Keat has dished out help since the start of the circuit breaker in April this year, and he came before Singaporeans again on Monday, August 17, to announce a further $8 billion, adding to the $93 billion given earlier. This latest infusion of funds was chiefly intended to extend support for sectors still reeling from the blow of the pandemic. But how far will government support go? Will it be enough to stem worries of a rising tide of retrenchments? Will it prod Singaporeans to retool and reskill for a new future? And indeed, does it mean that a major restructuring of the economy is needed? In the studio with me to tackle these issues are former nominated Member of Parliament and Associate Professor of Economics at the Singapore University of Social Sciences, Walter Tessera.
Hi.
And CIMB economist Song Sing Woon.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi, gentlemen. Maybe start off with giving us some perspective in the context of how Singapore's faring in this downturn and how effective the last four budgets have been. What's your top line thoughts on DPM Heng's announcement on Monday?
I think at the start of the year, we prepared for what we thought would be the worst case scenario, right? Which is, I think, something very much like SARS. The economy would get battered for a couple of months and then we would have a V-shaped recovery. And since then, what has transpired, what's happened to the world has been far worse than the worst case projections we could have come up with at the start of the year. When you look at DPM's announcement last week, it's pretty much, I think, along the same lines as has been laid out actually in all of the budgets we've launched this entire year. There have been, I think, three consistent themes: protecting jobs, protecting Singaporeans, which can be a bit different from protecting jobs, and finally preserving our firm's capabilities so that when the recovery does come, they're actually poised to capitalize on that. The main difference between all the budgets has been the growing realization that for some of our firms and workers, it's not going to be enough, or rather, it's not going to be possible to just keep them in stasis waiting for the recovery. You know, that might have been possible at the start of the year when we thought this would just take a couple of months. Clearly now, when you're looking at some of the best case scenarios being maybe not a recovery to business as normal until closer towards the end of 2021, how do you keep people in stasis for 1.5 years? So we have to shift more and more towards restructuring than we have thought about in the past.
I think just to add it to Walter's point, I think this is not your typical boom-bust cycle. We have seen a few of these cycles between Walter and I. The good thing, if there's such a good thing about recession, we have been preparing for a downturn. Remember, heading into this year, the economy, Singapore's growth was already slowing. This was late-stage growth, which are seeing signs of slowdown. We have seen firm already tightening up. And ahead of that, government were already essentially preparing businesses not to overlend, households not to overborrow. Gearing has been tightened. So that has helped. But obviously, the difference between this recession and the previous one is we cannot spend our way out to growth. Measures in prior recession and upturn and recovery, you say, okay, private sector spending slowed down, investment, CapEx slowed down, government spending stepped up. But obviously, as you can see, because this is an entirely different story, we cannot just say, hey, construction sector, we are lining up $30 billion worth of project, we are bringing them forward. We can't. There are still many workers stuck in dormitory because of the infection. So this is very, very different sort of a cycle and recovery from previous downturn. And because of that, that's why we have rolled out so many measures. And in fact, the last one, which was rolled out, I would call it the fifth budget, really, is to extend and carry some of the business through to into next year, into the next budget. Remember that budget FY 2021, we presented probably in February. Mm. So measures which had been announced will help some of them carry through. So we'll see what need to be further done, if need to, in the next year's budget to cushion and see how the recovery, if we hope by then, take shape and form. So it's a very, very different recession this time around with very severe impact and very uncertain recovery just because of the nature of the pandemic having that kind of impact.
So I guess the question really is, we look at the figures and they haven't been pretty, looking at the April to June quarter as well. But then the question is, have we bottomed out? Because that was during the circuit breaker. Now the circuit breaker has been lifted. It's been some months. Retail is coming back to life. Have we bottomed out?
We have seen the worst. of the recession is purely on the math side, because in second quarter, economic activities, not just in Singapore, but in many parts of the world, essentially grind to a halt. Supply disruption, both in terms of providing of goods and services, were affected by lockdown, and demand for services obviously had been curtailed because we were all at home. So household spending collapsed. Provider of goods and services also seen supply disruptions. Economic activity essentially cratered in the second quarter. As lights are turned on in rooms, like say like this, economic activity picks up. Students coming back to school, people going out to eat and dine, allows economic activity. So from that perspective, 2Q worse, 3Q less bad, because activities has resumed. But as we've seen with the resurgence in cases, what happens after that difference? So it is really a case of really bad first half, betterer second half. But is this recovery sustainable given that travel restrictions are still in place? When will that be lifted? When can Changi Airport handle 30 million people through, I think it's no, almost 30, I think, or 24 million?
Do you share that sense of optimism, Walter?
You know, I think the circuit breaker obviously was bad for the economy, but it was a necessary, a very painful trade-off we had to make in order to stem the rising tide of infections. What we have to be aware of is, even though a lot of our consumer-facing businesses are actually recovering quite well from the circuit breaker actually has got nothing to do with some of the longer-term, I think, structural challenges that the economy faces because of COVID-19. Probably the biggest longer-term structural challenge is the way that I think the global economic system is going to get reshaped because of countries, I think, reevaluating their exposure, their risk to global supply chains, countries and firms. And I think countries and companies asking themselves hard questions about the kind of place that Singapore should have in this global system. A very simple example is Singapore does a lot of business because we're home to many regional headquarters. And I think a lot of those regional headquarters have been extremely hard hit by the travel curbs that have been put into place. When your executives can't travel from Singapore to Indonesia, Thailand, wherever, they're going to ask themselves, well, why do I bother having this regional HQ here? And what I suspect is going to happen is there's going to be this realignment where any businesses or functions that can be shifted to offices in the countries where the firms are actually doing business. Our regional partners, for example, they're going to shift those functions there, and things which can be done remotely might just be shifted back to the global headquarters. There might be these kinds of realignments which take place, and that's going to have a much more serious impact on Singapore. I mean, another trend related to this has been the fact that remote working means that you don't have to do your work in Singapore, and that has opportunities and challenges for Singaporeans.
Yes.
Good thing is Singaporeans can now work for any company around the world.
But
while
obvious,
being in Singapore, right?
The opposite is also true.
Mm. Companies start asking, why am I having people work in Singapore? They could be working in Cincinnati, or they could be working in, you know, like Hanoi, wherever, right?
Yes. It
doesn't matter.
Exactly. But the question also is the realignment in Singapore, not just regionally or globally. There's relief that the job support scheme has managed to stem the bleed in terms of retrenchments. Yep. But then there are also, you know, the 600 firms that have returned all these payouts because they're doing quite well. So maybe the question also is, how well is Singapore doing in differentiating between firms that need this critical support versus propping up zombie companies that are not really making full use of this productive labour?
The fact of the matter is that we haven't actually attempted to differentiate too much except at the broad sectoral or industry level. When you look at the industry level, it's quite obvious why we've given more support to travel-exposed businesses, consumer-facing businesses during the circuit breaker, and we've given less support to others. But even within these sectors, there's a lot of heterogeneity in how firms are affected. You think about F&B, for example. Everyone knows they were hard hit during the circuit breaker, but after that over, we've seen that F&B chains, which are catering more to local consumers located in the heartland, I don't think there's a big problem there. You know, they're actually pretty crowded, but those which were in the CBD catering to tourists, it's not clear whether they can ever recover from this.
Well, it depends on how they adapt.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about how well they use social media, how old the older. I was just talking to a boss at an old Teochew restaurant in Jalan Bukit Merah over there. They have old school. They have been around for 40, 50 years. They're so used to people coming to the restaurant, sit down and makan, that they're finding it a challenge to sell their goods online website, etc. Whereas those younger ones, more entrepreneurial ones, are able to be engaged far better with the so-called the makan crowd in Singapore, that they actually done better after they adapt and change. One of my friends said, hey, I might even actually reduce my physical presence because my online order are now good enough for me to keep going.
So even geography is not destiny here, right?
Yeah,
it really depends on how you're able to adapt.
Yeah, indeed. And there are obviously some that cannot open. I mean, we're talking about today's paper, the cocktail bar guys. No, they can't open because they are just licensing prevents them to, and they have to help themselves, even though their assistants are in place. So they are all within one industry, as Walter say, there are many layers. At the first instance, when help are given to everybody, I think the government has to be generous. Okay, there's a flood of liquidity, money assistance first, and perhaps as we work our way through the recession, we are able to differentiate, and we're starting too with the latest sort of relief measures in terms of what are the help that might expire by the end of the year, what are those that are still needing help and can be extended, and perhaps into next year as well. So this kind of calibration, I think, is very important going forward.
I hear you guys saying that there's this winnowing process that's probably underway. But what is the sense on whether the job support scheme and other measures are actually delaying that creative destruction? It's actually an impediment.
It's a very valid concern, because a job support scheme is really no different from medical life support. And you know, the ironic thing about that is at a certain point, it actually becomes a hindrance, or rather it becomes a real threat to the patient's life. And here, I mean, if you want to extend the metaphor further, the patient we really should be thinking about is the competitiveness of the economy. There are valid concerns there that if you support workers and firms too generously when the revenue just isn't there, you actually do slow down this kind of turnover. To put it in perspective, several of our political leaders have already said several times before, it's not so much the jobs that we want to protect, it's actually the workers and the people, right? So if you're in an industry which is not going to see any daylight for the next 1.5 years, despite your best efforts, maybe it's better if you can pivot to something else. And in that case, what we want to do, I think, is to support you in that pivot rather than just pay you to actually not do much at all, you know, which doesn't make any sense for anybody.
At the beginning, it is useful to keep everybody going. It also means that money circulating, multiplier effect through the economy of consumer being able to spend, because there's some money, helicopter money coming down. But at some point in time, as Walter say, we have to be more focused with our assistant, helping those who can be helped, and those, obviously, in some industries where there's still significant restriction in place, what can we do?
Right, like the critical sectors like aviation.
Aviation. Or even very simple, come back to my food. It's always about food. Come down to me, Chinatown, the Mala restaurant, there are just no Chinese visitors. Are you going to be keeping Mala restaurant alive? Obviously not. What are they going to be doing? Are they going to be selling nasi lemak instead? Perhaps they can. Many have closed. Many of the medicine shop in the Jalan Besar area have been significantly affected. Some have closed. What are they going to do? Can they pivot, or do they say, okay, let's call it a day and we'll see what we can do? So a lot really depends on the business owners themselves in terms of what's the next step they themselves want to take.
So this new phase of restructuring, right, something that you both brought up already, how different do you think the Singapore economy will look like in, I suppose, March 2021, which is the whole duration of the rest of the stimulus packages that DPM Heng had given out? How different will it look? How different should it look?
We will probably still see some form of assistance in place. February will be when the budget 2021 will be announced. Some of the industry, whether it's engineering, leisure travel, transport engineering, the most vulnerable one, I think it will still require some form of assistance. We are still going to be seeing many more planes, for instance, parked than flying, although I would say many would have been flying already, but still not sufficient. The fact that Singapore will not be seeing 1.6 million tourists every month is going to have a significant impact. It's not going to happen overnight or within the next 12 months, for instance. So what do we do with many of this industry? If you're talking about event companies, for instance, F&B, many will die. There are just too many of them, honestly. But many will also adapt and thrive in this new environment. It is really someone being able to see whether they can take the opportunity that is given the constraint, where are the opportunities?
Actually, Walter, do you think it says something about the state of our economy and how we've been structured in terms of the sectors and skill if there is going to be this massive restructuring in the next 7 months?
The restructuring has already been well underway, in fact, over the last half a year or so. One of the reasons why many Singaporeans haven't noticed the scale of it is simply that a lot of the brunt in terms of manpower adjustment has been taken by foreign workers. I've heard, for example, that if you talk about the planes going to Singapore, right, between Singapore and KL, for example, hardly anybody is coming into Singapore from KL, but the planes going back the other way are full. Mm-hmm. And why are they full? Because it's not just Malaysians who are going back home. It's actually a lot of Malaysians who have been retrenched or let go, one form or another, and they're going back home. The truth is, a lot of these difficult adjustments have not been borne by Singaporeans in the last couple of months. Of course, we hear about it when Singaporeans get retrenched, but there are many more foreign workers who have actually lost their jobs. This restructuring, I think, is likely to continue. But to take a step back, firms in Singapore adapt to the policies and the structures in place. And the reality is Singapore is a high-cost environment to do business. It's got a very small and limited local labour market. So one of the ways that firms have adapted over the years to this is to make ready use of our foreign labour policies. When the difficult times come, the foreign workers are actually first on the chopping block.
How worried are you of unemployment among Singaporeans in the next phase?
It's definitely going to be a very serious issue because I think we are running out of that headroom to actually cut foreign workers and firms adjusting that way. And especially as I think the job support scheme tapers off, firms which have revenue shortfalls and they've got cost structures which are just not suited for their current revenue, they're going to have to start cutting more into the Singapore core as much as they may not want to.
The reason why you are now looking at the Singapore core is you have little visibility on when you're going to see sustainable recovery coming back again. Is within FMB, you can see we are not going to turning to circuit breaker phase one. It's phase two now, but at least we can still go out, eat, we adjust to that. But for the travel, leisure, as I say, if we're not seeing tourists coming in on the number that we, or even business travel of numbers themselves, those industries, the whole supply chain, whether you are in the business of servicing plane, making engines, or cleaning aeroplane to flying aeroplanes and maintaining them, you have to make the decision, what kind of costs can I sustain to maintain and increase my services? So if that demand recovery is still somewhat uncertain, but you know it's going to be a bit more flatline rather than exponential, you have to be looking at costs. First layer of costs, obviously, the foreign labour, as Walter says. Next layer will be the local workforce, even if there are support measures in place. Because, again, we have limited resources, not just land physical, but on the finance side as well, we have to be very focused in terms of how we assist. So yes, adjustment will continue. And inevitably, that's the whole meaning of a recession, of business failure, of job losses, before new creation and new hiring take place. At this juncture, the fact that investment on the ground had slowed down, obviously significantly in second quarter, there will be slower investment in terms of firms and CAPEX. Who are going to be putting more money on the ground given this kind of uncertainty? Only those that see visibility, e-commerce, digitization, but elsewhere, far more selective. If you're not putting money on the ground, hiring will slow down significantly.
So one bright spot really is the jobs growth incentive, which outlines certain sectors that are high growth, have a lot of potential, in fact, are growing a little bit during this period. It sounds like a plan to help Singaporean workers catch the winds of recovery, if I might say. But why the high levels of wage support for older workers, those 40 and above? Should there even be this differentiation between workers of different ages, you think?
The challenge with older worker employment has been around for quite some time. When we talk about older worker employment, it's important to understand that there are huge differences by cohorts. When you talk about the very old workers, those which are close to retirement age or maybe past it, that's a generation of Singaporeans who are not very skilled or educated because they grew up at a time where education was a very, very expensive investment or resource. For that group, actually, their problem is quite different. Their challenge is making making ends meet. But their challenge is not actually employment per se, because most of the jobs that they actually are qualified to do are actually fairly low-skill jobs, which do not have a significant structural, you might say, unemployment problem. But when you go to a cohort just younger, maybe 10 years, 20 years younger, so late 40s, early 50s, and so on, that's a group which is actually much better educated, and their expectations, their skill set, really quite different. They are not going to want to do the kinds of jobs that now you find late 60s or early 70s Singaporeans doing, you know, security cleaning and so on. That's not for them. Quite a lot of them are in PMET jobs. They face this challenge that many employers perceive that they are not, for example, adaptable, or they don't have skills which are up to date, but they are commanding fairly high salaries. And that's the structural challenge we face about, first, whether employers are discriminating on the basis of age or other factors, and whether we have the tools to overcome that discrimination. And second, if employers are not discriminating, if it really is a case of a skills mismatch, whether the skills can be adapted quickly enough so that they still have a good career runway left, you know? These are some of the real challenges we face. And challenges were already there well before COVID-19, but they've been thrown into sharp focus because the number of, older Singaporeans who are going to get displaced because of this recession is much larger than in normal times. Mm. And it's a much bigger challenge to work with.
Yeah, hence the latest, set of measures as announced by the ministry side to try to encourage firm to at least look at hiring them despite the perhaps the higher costs. We'll see when the details come through. So it's interesting. So it's really about trying to see how we can help this labour force as many ways as possible, whether you are a young graduate entering the labour force this year, or as one of the key issues. Entering the labour force has never been a big issue in an environment where there's still plenty of job creation, but older worker, as Walter pointed out, is an issue, and this is where some of the incentive will be, I think, and has been introduced. I think in that sense, when we really have to look at policy to how we can help, we put our head to it, and if we need to, we find tune it.
So you raise a really good point, which is that we've been looking at government so much over the last couple of months. Almost like $100 billion in total has been spent. But who are the other players that must make this happen? You mentioned firms.
This is always a case of recession. Private sector pull back. They don't put money on the ground. So government step up. The challenge for government stepping now, with typical recession and pick up, is through the construction sector. You bring forward projects. We had Jurong Island as one of the earlier ones. We had the biomedical cluster as a result. But this time, we couldn't pump prime via the contractor, subcon. It will gradually come back, but at least for now, the alternative, which is very different, and if this pandemic had hit 2 decades ago, I think we'll be in far more serious trouble. The difference this time, opportunity coming from digitization, new technology, allows them to focus attention, energy, money in terms of job creation. This is the one biggest difference this cycle in terms of this recession. We are still able to pump prime, but not necessarily through physical construction, but through the knowledge side, through technology side. Touch wood, that is, if there's any upside to this, is we accelerate the digitization process.
Right.
Our resources is lack of size, lack of people. But if we put enough energy into it, we may be able to jumpstart the whole digitization of the economy that will position us for the recovery to come. But in between, the transition is going to be very painful, because you're going to be abruptly pulling one set of labour force, the old PMET side, and say, hey, look, we got opportunity. Do you want to do this? If not, you're going to be left out. So really up to the people, sometimes themselves, to decide, do you want to shift? Do you want to change? Low expectation, or you just watch up, as they say.
Now that we are in this for about 6 months or so since the coronavirus hit Singapore, how would you measure how Singapore is doing? How would you measure how the government packages have done so far? What's your report card?
When it comes to controlling the spread of the virus among the community population, among the local population, Singaporeans, for example, I think the government has done an extremely good job. I don't think there are many other countries which have managed to keep community spread to the level that it is in Singapore. Unfortunately, I think we also have to acknowledge that we did not do a good job of controlling the spread of the virus among foreign workers in Singapore. Quite honestly, the only thing that has actually rescued this situation from being a humanitarian disaster is the fact that among the foreign worker population, they're generally quite healthy, young, robust, and therefore the virus has had very, very minimal effects among them, thankfully, despite the high case counts there. Overall, especially among the local community, it's been a very good performance controlling the virus. As for the economy, the government, by acting early to come in with the job support program, has actually prevented the job loss and effects on the economy from being much worse. It could really have been much worse. When you look at how other countries responded, actually almost every country has thrown in quite a lot of stimulus money. One key difference is how you design those packages. And a difference, for example, between Singapore and the United States is that the US support is actually much more oriented towards unemployment support. As a result, actually a lot more workers have lost their jobs. Now, the people themselves, they may not necessarily be worse off if they are able to get quick unemployment support. But I think what you worry about there is whether the businesses lose capability, and if they can keep on workers and pay them something for a couple of months when demand is not so good, the capability to, you know, respond to an upturn is actually much stronger compared to laying people off, even if those people are able to get unemployment benefits. Honestly, we'll have to look back on this in a couple of years' time to see actually which countries really had a better idea. It's a bit hard to tell right now.
So still too early. What's your take?
I would say because this pandemic is entirely unprecedented, I don't know how many times you heard that word being mentioned, unprecedented, this year, Singapore government and policymakers are very good. We learn from what we have experienced in past recession. Anything similar to this, closest would be SARS. So we took out the SARS playbook, which was only just 6 months of experience. But it, as it unfolds, entirely different experience has to be learned. Hence, the foreign worker dormitory. And that is our lesson. So we have learned from that one. And our playbook is now updated. And we are able to face future pandemic far more convincingly and deal with it far more easily.
Are you saying it's very hard to determine in a yardstick?
We set new yardstick with every recession. So we set an entirely new book this time around. City-state, so we have learned from that. From an economic perspective, very different. We learned from prior recession, which is why Walter points of how fast we roll out the incentive and measures, bang, 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 one every month at the start of the year, to cushion the impact. Effectiveness, I would say, something which is very close to many Singaporean mind, the state of the local property market. Because we have kept stability some sort, worsening, yes, foreign workers has lost jobs, but not to the same number as we initially had expected. When the recession, when the pandemic hit, we said, oh, we may get to a 5% unemployment rate, which will be unemployment of north of 150,000. It is still rising, but we have now scaled it back. Maybe 3.5%, at worst 4%, far cry from what it was. So support measures and lessons learned from previous recession to put a cushion under the economy has helped. But obviously, there are still pressure. So this is, I think, the very big important difference. We are a small city state. We can respond far more quickly from lessons learned in the past. And I think we will continue to do so. We look not just as today. Very few governments can do this. We look at what's happening today, but also what will happen to our economy and job, hopefully, in coming decade or two. A lot of this emphasis, therefore, on the new economy coming through and where the jobs are going to come from. So we're dealing with this also present and the future.
So last question, I didn't really get a sense from you on whether we have actually bottomed out and therefore what it means going forward. I wanted to get your parting shots for our listeners on going forward, what the strategy could be and whether you think we've actually bottomed out. And that means that there's a sea change in our strategy, economically speaking, going forward as Singapore.
I would just say from a number side, stats and economy, you can contract, let's say, 7% this year, rebound 7% next year. Hey, good. But if you look at the math side, you take 100, you fall 7%, you're to what, 90, 93, right? But when you recover 7% next year, you're still below your 100, just around 99.5. So your economy hasn't recovered back to what your pre-crisis level was. But yet at the same time, there are people still entering the labour force. There are people losing their jobs. So your income growth will be constrained to some extent. So yes, you can see that recovery, but not in the same quality or quantity. From a mathematical standpoint, you will still need to see your recovery sustained going forward. But we don't know how the recovery path is because we are learning new things about this pandemic.
Right, it depends on the path of the virus as well.
Exactly.
What about you, Walter?
If you look at some headline numbers, GDP, employment and so on, and you look at the experience of some of the countries where the peaks of the virus happened a bit earlier than in Singapore, there's usually this pattern whereby they do experience the worst of everything, actually, largely as a result of the control measures the countries put in place to contain the virus. And after that, there's a bit of a recovery. So the bottom actually tends to come around the time of your most serious control measures. So what that means is that in Singapore and globally, if there is no severe second wave, or if there is a second wave, the way in which we deal with it is more calibrated than 2 or 3 months ago where you just shut down everything, then I think you could say that maybe on headline figures, the worst is over. However, I think the headline figures really don't tell the whole story. I think in the case of Singapore in particular, how Singapore fits into the global economic order, I think is a much more serious question to our long-term viability. And that's why I think this question of what is the recovery going to look like, will it be sharp or will it be actually quite modest? You know, that is something which has a much more serious effect on our long-term livelihood and our aspirations. Very hard to tell, I think, at the moment.
Thank you so much, Sing-Woon, Walter. There you have it. The road ahead for Singapore that will possibly see one of its biggest restructuring exercise over the next 7 months. That was former NMP and SUSS Associate Professor of Economics Walt De Serra and CIMB economist Song Sing-Woon. You've been listening to Heart of the Matter with Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer, working hard behind the scenes. And I'm Lin Su Ling, signing off.